Hi, and welcome to the radio portion of DC Public Safety. I'm Len Sipes. Today at our microphone is Curtis Atkinson. Curtis is the program manager of the Day Reporting Center. I've been to the Day Reporting Center a couple times to do some focus groups on programs and to ask the opinion of the offenders who are there for the Day Reporting System. And wow, what an interesting group. What a very, very, very challenging group of individuals. I remember doing the focus group, and this was a pretty rough group. They were, you know, very challenging. Fugitive Safe Surrender was a program that was run by the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, as well as the U.S. Marshal's Office, as well as the Collective Criminal Justice System, where we asked different people to voluntarily surrender. And we had 530 people voluntarily surrendering. But I wanted to talk to a group of offenders who were a fairly tough group of offenders, and I found them, Curtis, in your Day Reporting program. These are the individuals who aren't doing well, from what I understand, individuals who cannot find work during the daytime, so you bring them in. You find that there are individuals there as a intermediate sanction, where they're not doing well under supervision for a wide variety of reasons, so they have to report to you every day. Yes. Am I in the ballpark?
Absolutely.
Okay, tell me about it.
Well, my guys are an interesting bunch. They really are. It's an involuntary population. They're referred by their probation or parole officer due to the fact that they're unemployed.
They don't want to be there.
They absolutely do not want to be there.
Okay.
And, you know, the first few days are usually the roughest. But, you know, after a while, they begin to buy into the program. And I actually subscribe to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you came in at the very early stages of a new batch.
And they were a wild bunch. I mean, basically, they sat there and told me that, look, Mr. Sipes, not only am I not going to participate in this program, I would tell other people not to participate in this program. But it was interesting because after the full half hour, and they were getting on my nerves, and I think I was getting on their nerves. They did tell me that, you know, by and large, you know, this program is probably a pretty good idea. Fugitive Safe Surrender, asking nonviolent offenders with warrants to voluntarily turn themselves in, and so they went along with it at the end of the program, and they said, yeah, we would, you know, we understand why you're doing this, and we understand why some people would participate. I'm just telling you, I wouldn't participate.
They have absolutely no trust when it comes to the criminal justice system in general.
Mm-hmm.
Based on their experiences from the point of arrest all the way through the supervision process. So when you spoke about meeting at a church and actually talking about this program that could be to their benefit,
right,
they didn't believe that what we were saying was true.
Right. And there's a universal mistrust, not just in Washington, D.C., but of any group of offenders anywhere in the country, probably anywhere in the world,
absolutely,
of we within the criminal justice system. They don't trust us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest barriers that I have in working with the population on a daily basis, getting them to understand that we are here to help them. We're here to assist them, and we're here to help them become reintegrate into the community.
Right. To help them escape a life of crime and help them escape a life of drugs.
Absolutely.
Now, we get into that for a second. Who's Curtis Atkinson? Where do you come from, Curtis? How did you get here?
I hail from this area. I was born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area.
Okay.
Spent about 13 years in Baltimore, completing my education.
And that's where I grew up, and that's where I was in the criminal justice system. Balmer, as we refer to it.
Exactly. I did. I primarily worked with the juvenile population before coming to this agency.
Mm-hmm. Which is a rough population.
And they are very rough. That was a bit too much for me. But I dealt with transitional age youth. So
transitional
age youth. Those were the youth who were about to be waived to the adult system.
Ah,
so and they
real tough. Well, you love this real tough population, don't you, Curtis?
I think I'm made for it. I do because I try my best to have a balance between being tough and being fair.
Right.
And I think for the most part they understand that. But, you know, dealing with transitional age youth, they used to tell us all the time they would rather be in the adult system because there are less services.
So that fewer we provide services.
Yeah.
So they don't want those daggone
they
services.
They do not. And they didn't realize it's going to stick with them for the rest of their
get
life.
Get out of my face.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just let me do my time and then let me get back on the street.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that becomes problematic because they desperately need the programs. One of the things that research basically says is that you can watch them all you want. And the population, the citizens of not only Washington, D.C., but throughout this country really want them supervised. But at the same time, one of the things that we say is that the research very, very, very clearly indicates that it's just not a matter of supervision. Programs have got to be there. So you're a combination of supervision and programs because you're there to try to help them get a job, create a resume, how you present yourself before an employer, referring them to programs that are clearly within their best interest.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the biggest things about the Day Reporting Center are my community relationships. Mm-hmm. They really help to sustain the program. Mm-hmm. I have a list of about a dozen partners who work with me on a regular basis mm-hmm. who are able to provide the services for the offenders in the community.
Right.
So regardless of whether they're discharged from my program or not, regardless of whether they're on supervision or off, they can still receive services from these community-based programs.
Sure. And there's a lot of people in the community that are willing to help them.
Absolutely. There really are. There are a lot of resources that are being underutilized, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And these agencies, in the spirit of reciprocity, they're providing a free service to us at CSOSA, but we're providing them with the numbers that they so desperately need.
Sure. And I think that that's it's a two-way street. But our guys, if you will, because the overwhelming majority of our offenders are male.
Absolutely.
You know, it is the paradox. They desperately need that eighth grade education, an eighth grade certificate. They desperately need the GED in this economy. Mm-hmm. In some cases, they desperately need to learn how to write.
Absolutely.
In some cases, they desperately need to understand how to conduct themselves on the job and doing a job interview and what a job expects. And that's one of the things that we try to provide here at CSOSA. We have programs that will assess a person's educational level, provide them with the GED, provide them with a reading assistance, provide them with assistance in terms of getting a job. We do quite a bit of drug treatment, but mm-hmm. you know, we do up to 25% of the population that needs it. That means 75% we refer basically to private or DC agencies, mm-hmm. and that's tough. We provide mental health services. So there's a lot of we provide anger management training. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of individuals. There's a lot of opportunities for the people who are under our supervision. But that's the paradox, is that, you know, getting them there and having them take advantage of it are two different things.
Absolutely. So really what we do is we bring the community partners to CSOSA. You know, I can give them all the referral information in the world, but they're not actually going to make it to the threshold of that organization.
Right.
By us bringing the community partners to our agency, they really have no choice but to sit there as a captive audience
right.
and respond to the information and then elect to partake in the services or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's really up to them. And the community partners are, like I said, very generous with their services.
Mm-hmm.
They're very gracious in how they conduct themselves, and they understand the population that they're working with. Usually what I do is I explain my population, because as you know, it can be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And as they come in, they know exactly what they're getting into and know exactly who they're going to be working with. And they come in with their resources intact.
And that's wonderful, because there are social service agencies out there who would rather not deal with offenders. Now, that's not just in D.C. That's throughout the country.
That's true.
And that's one of the biggest problems we have, is that making sure that the individuals, if they're going to serve our population, understanding how difficult our population can be. I mean, we talk about difficulty. You know, I've been in this system for, going on for 40 years. And, you know, I've done groups. I've ran a group in a prison system. I've done the jail or job corps kids. I've done gang counseling on the streets of the city of Baltimore. You know, this is a very tough population, regardless as to where it is that you go. Now, it can be immensely rewarding taking individuals from a tough background, and suddenly a light does go off where they get yes. their GED, where they go over and involve themselves in a job with a future, that they reorient their attitudes, they reorient their friends. I mean, you know, most of these offenders, all they see around them is their friends going to jail, their friends getting shot, their mm-hmm. friends getting injured. I mean, in some cases, and again, it's not just Washington, D.C., it's all throughout this country, sort of like a battle zone. These are in some cases, battle-scarred veterans.
Definitely.
And they're not coming to you saying, oh, please help me. You've got to somehow, some way break through those barriers, and that's the toughest part of the job.
It definitely is. It definitely is. And like I said, they're very resistant in the beginning. But once they realize that this program is intended to assist them and their families, for that matter, and help them get back on track, they sort of buy into it.
How do you break through those barriers?
It's a difficult process at times. But once they see that we have tangible resources for them, because,
right.
you know, it's a population where it's all about show and prove.
Right. Show me. Absolutely. Don't talk to me. Show me.
Exactly. And once we're able to do that, then they buy into it, and then a lot of the barriers are broken down.
Okay. And is, you know, doing this on a one-on-one basis is real tough. Doing it in a group basis where they're reinforcing each other's negative behavior, wow. I mean, you've got to be almost a magician to go before this group of individuals. How many people on a daily basis?
The average daily population is anywhere from 20 to 25.
Okay. To go before 20 to 25 human beings on a daily basis, all of them have chips on their shoulders mm-hmm. the size of Montana. To break through those barriers is tough.
It really is. It really is. And I spend a great deal of my time redirecting conversations, to be very honest with you. But once they realize that I'm not one to be played with, I'll be very honest with you. You have to be very firm.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very firm, but yet still compassionate. So sometimes it's spent doing some of the housekeeping things, to be mm-hmm. very honest with you, redirecting mm-hmm. their conversation. But we can eventually get to what needs to be done.
When I was doing the focus group in terms of the Fugitive Safe Surrender program, I lost my temper at the end because one guy was particularly mouthy, one guy was particularly nasty, and I turned around and I said, look, my man, you know, I have seen you 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It just doesn't end for some of you, does it? and he was startled by that because I was looking at him straight in the eye, and it was like, you know, that sometimes is the issue for those of us who've been in the criminal justice system, is seeing human beings filter themselves through the system, human beings that are worth reaching,
mm-hmm.
but it is sometimes so difficult to reach them.
It definitely is. It really is. And, you know, but at the same time, as hard as their exteriors are, when you get them alone, you can really see what the issues are.
Yes. I totally, totally, totally agree. This is why doing it in a group is so challenging, because one of the things that I found in my career is that once you've reached, because a third of that population, I'm just generalizing now, a third of that population wants to be reached.
Absolutely.
A third of the population is sitting on the fence. You can reach them. If you've got enough courage and enough fortitude and keep your temper in check, mm-hmm. And a third are tough. A third just probably are not going to make it at all. So two-thirds of the individuals sitting there are salvageable, yet it's just so easy for them to get sucked back in the drug, sucked back in the crime, sucked back into deviance. So you are the lone person, you and what we call, what the rest of the country calls parole and probation agents, what we call community supervision mm-hmm. officers, between the two of you and whatever treatment providers you refer them to or get involved in their lives, you all collectively have got to somehow, some way, remind yourselves that two-thirds of the people here can be saved.
Absolutely, absolutely. I would even say it's more than that. Really, what it's about is assessing their needs, getting past the barriers. And not, because what they're really trying to do is they're trying to take you off your game.
Right.
They want
yep.
to prove that they have power over you, because yep. so many years the system has had power over them.
Right.
So now they want to assert their own authority.
Right.
So oftentimes it's unnecessary power struggle.
Right.
But I don't engage in that. I'm not going to go toe-to-toe with you. We're not going to go back and forth on anything. I'm going to say my piece. I'm going to allow you to vent a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to move on with what we're supposed to do. And then once you show them that structure, they have no choice but to respond to it.
When I did gang counseling in Baltimore City, I would have, again, in a group structure, because again, you're out there on the streets with these kids,
mm-hmm.
And when you're there, it is in a group structure. It doesn't. I find that found that it really didn't work all that well. But one by one by one, they come to you and say, "Can you get me back in school?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there really a job with a possibility for me here? You know, I'm because of the group that I did with dealt with was heavily into glue sniffing. And you know, they, you know, from time to time they would come to me and say, look, I really need to stop this. It's really screwing up my life. You know, is there a program that you can get me into? So that's my observation. Is that your observation? They come to you little bit by little bit by little bit, one by one, and say, you know, quite frankly, Curtis, what you're talking about makes sense. Can you help me with this? And can you help me with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the most difficult client during a group will usually come into me directly after the group and in their own way apologize.
Right.
The words "I'm sorry" will never come out their mouth.
Oh, I understand.
But they have some type of gesture or something to indicate that they did not mean to come off as harsh as they did.
Right.
And I'm fine with that. You know, we're able to process it after the fact and actually deal with what the real issue is.
And a lot of times it is the individual who is the loudest and who is the meanest in
most
many
definitely.
Cases is the person most in need of assistance. And he understands that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had a guy that came to my office yesterday, and he is widely regarded as, I mean, he was in Lorton and other facilities for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as he puts it himself, he is completely conditioned and knew nothing but jail time. He was
right.
put in there when he was 18.
Right.
And now to come out in the community, this is all he knows.
Right.
He is a textbook case of that type of institutional rage.
Right.
And everything we've thrown at him, he's so skeptical about. You know, we've managed to secure employment opportunities for him. We placed him in a CDL training program.
CDL is a
commercial driver's license. Yeah, he wants to be a truck driver.
Where they can make a lot of money, by the way.
Absolutely.
A lot of money.
Absolutely. But he is so resistant, thinking that every opportunity is not going to hire him because of his record. He's unwilling to try.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you know, the agency is applying pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And he is becoming more and more angry. And he expresses that via this very rough exterior
right.
and very
right.
challenging at all times.
Right.
But he was literally in my office yesterday just venting. He said, I need help. I just want somebody to help me. And no one would ever have guessed that that's him. That's who he is.
Well, it is when I was dealing, I think I have this on another program, talking to an individual in our high-risk drug unit where the people have very long histories of crime, very long histories of drug use. They are indeed a very difficult population to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And as she put it, the harder the exterior, where the guy comes in and he is just really, really, really hard, looks hard, dresses hard, acts hard, that, you know, if you ever break through that exterior, what you find is a very frightened individual. So the R of toughness is a mask for extreme vulnerability.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, had this guy not been coming to me every day for several weeks now, we would probably have never known that, because the first
mm-hmm.
thing he shows you is that anger.
Right.
Whenever we refer him to a community-based organization or even to an employment opportunity, he has that rough exterior, so no one ever
right.
looks past that.
Right.
But he's
and
begun
people
to trust
us. And people are frightened
by this. Most
social
definitely.
Social service providers don't want to deal with
Absolutely.
This person. And yet, you know, the core of this individual, I mean, that's a paradox, isn't it? The toughness, the roughness, the clothes, the attitude, everything that goes along with it is just a mask for extreme, extreme, extreme vulnerability.
And frustration as well.
And frustration as well.
Absolutely. And this is what he was trying to convey to us. But even as he's talking to us and, quite frankly, pouring his heart out, he's doing it in a manner that is just very challenging, very
right.
aggressive.
Now, where does all this come from? Now, you know, there was a book called Street Corner Society
mm-hmm.
that I had to read in my criminological studies. Did you read that?
I did.
Okay, well, there you go. So it's an Italian street corner gang back in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be not, the city is not supposed to be identified, but it's New York. And, you know, you read this book, it's the same thing that we deal with. And quite frankly, it's the same thing that anybody deals with, regardless of where you are in this country, regardless of what the race of the offender is, regardless of the background. It's this tough exterior. It's this rough exterior. It's this whole sense that I don't believe in you. I don't even believe in me. They believe in fate. They're not part of this immediate world that you and I are involved in. They don't believe that they have control over who they are and what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Getting high is a big part of who they are. Carrying a weapon, although they carry, you know, revolvers and knives, a different world. But it's the same thing, isn't it? I mean, that whole sense of rough exterior. And if it is the same thing, regardless of the group, where does it come from?
Well, for this gentleman, it came from a childhood of pain, and it came through 20 years of having to fight his way through the system, as he describes it.
Right.
And then it comes through being in the community for 5 years and not seeing things come to life like you thought they would.
Right.
You know, after dreaming in jail 20 years where life would be on the outside,
right.
it's just not happening the way that you want it to be.
Right.
But the fortunate thing about our programs, we had opportunity to confront. You know, a number of referrals were made. You know, he was supposed to go get health insurance. He was supposed to go to a clinic to get the anger management counseling that he needed.
Right.
He was supposed to do a host of things that he did not do. So my role is to confront that, to obviously listen to him and counsel him, of course, because he was very angry.
Mm-hmm.
You can't send someone outside like that.
Right.
We had to calm him down. We had to
right.
get him to a place that
he'll never
he
get a job with that persona.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we had to do that. And then we had to, quite frankly, address what he did not do.
Right.
You want to complain about your situation, but have you done everything on your part?
Right.
and literally break it down for him so that he could understand it, and sometimes in a manner that he can understand it.
And the interesting thing is, and this is where we talk about the roughness and the toughness of the job, but the interesting thing is that these individuals, I have seen it personally, where the extraordinarily rough, tough, nasty exterior, a year later, he's got a GED and a commercial driver's license, and he's doing fairly well. He's off drugs.
Absolutely.
And so there is so much pessimism. And a good part of this program talked about how rough and tough and difficult it is. And those of us in the system know how difficult it is. I'm not quite sure, but I'm going to guess that the people listening to this program who are not part of the system, they understand it every day. But these are all salvageable individuals if you can find the right method of reaching them.
You absolutely can. And actually, when he first came to us, he's somebody that I wouldn't have thought could have made it through a 3-month CDL program.
Right.
Because of his anger, because of his resentment. He's just very challenging in general.
Right.
So if someone's in the front of the class teaching him about how do you drive a commercial vehicle,
right,
he's going to interject his own opinion, regardless of what he knows
it or not.
But he made it through, and he made it through because he constantly checked in with us. We constantly checked in on him,
right,
and quite frankly, in our own special way, told him to tone certain things down.
Right.
And he was able to respond, adapt, listen, and learn.
Right.
And now he's out. He has this piece of paper that he had longed for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
But now the issue is, I don't really know what to do with it.
Right.
So now we're going in a completely different direction and helping him follow through with an actual plan. We had focused so long on developing that plan. Now we're in the action stage.
And a lot of individuals like this. I mean, it is very difficult, say, for an offender, where we provide one-on-one services here at CSOSA. In most jurisdictions in the country, they don't.
Yeah.
So they were referred to the local health clinic to get on that list for anger counseling or for drug treatment. They are referred to the unemployment office where he goes in and stands for 2 hours. And you know, the general public is going to say, hey, I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, why can't your offender do this? Well, it's just different for them. That they have little tolerance. They're suspicious of the bureaucracy, and if you don't provide these direct services to them, oftentimes they will fail. I mean, that seems to be the issue in terms of providing those direct services by people who understand how to deal with offenders. And if you do that, you can take a person who either you're going to spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in the long run due to continued criminal involvement,
mm-hmm,
or the person becomes a taxpayer. But it takes special people, special programs to help that person get from point A to point B.
It really does. And we really do have to admit that a lot of these community-based programs, or social services, I should say, aren't very sensitive to our population. So they are treated unfairly when they go into a large clinic. They're not treated.
Or they create a certain sense of unfairness for themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It goes both ways. What we try to do is we try to minimize that, because then they're going to use that as a barrier and state why they can't get something done.
Right.
So my job is to go out and bring the resources in that can assist them with the process. A perfect example of that is getting them their health insurance.
Right.
As opposed to going to a crowded clinic, as you had just mentioned,
mm-hmm,
where they could be waiting in line for hours,
right,
we bring the Project Orion van to our community supervision
sites.
So they can get their health insurance in a matter of minutes.
Right. And that could make the difference between the person being vested in himself or vested in terms of going back to drugs. The whole gang structure, the whole criminal structure, being what we call in the lifestyle, is so easy to slip back into. It's so embracing. You know, your friends are there, the language is there, the movement, the whole sense of being, again, sucked back into that is just amazing. Somewhere along the line, the person's got to say, okay, I'm not going to invest myself in that. I'm going to invest in myself for my sake, for the sake of my children, because 70 to 80% of these guys are parents.
Definitely.
You know, for the sake of my mother, for whatever reason, the relationship with God, you know, once they've reached that point, services and people who know how to deliver those services to that particular population need to be there. And that's, I think, the whole purpose of the Day Reporting Center.
It absolutely is the whole purpose. You know, we are completely involved in a wraparound approach, meaning that they're here for structure and discipline. You know, we monitor the time that they arrive. They're here for the majority of the day. We provide them with services while they're here, but then we link them outside of that as well.
Right. Right, right. So the whole thing can continue beyond Dave reporting.
Absolutely.
But again, I asked you a little while ago, where does this chip, this sense of anger, the chip on the shoulder, the size of Montana, where does it come from? You mentioned in the terms of that one particular person, a lousy childhood. Mm-hmm. People who listen to this program know that that's a pet peeve of mine. I think the majority of the individuals who come to us, and I'm not excusing their criminality in any way, shape, or form. If you mm-hmm. do the crime, you do the time. But the sheer hard truth of it is that the majority of them come from histories of childhood abuse and neglect.
I absolutely agree with that. And we have very open and frank conversations about that. And it's not just childhood abuse and neglect. It's the grief, of course, that they're still living with, but it's the trauma as well. Many of them have seen some horrific things that you and I can possibly imagine.
Battle-scarred veterans.
Absolutely, absolutely. As the article that we had did quite some time ago speaks about.
Right. And that becomes who you are. I mean, that whole persona as the woman from the high-risk drug offender office, the community supervision officer, I thought it was very, very, very interesting in the way that she put that. They are combat veterans. They've seen so many other friends hurt, die. They've been injured in the past. By the time they get to social service providers, you know, they're difficult cases to deal with, principally because they're scared to death.
Definitely.
They're scared to death, and if people understand that and can break through that, which takes a special person and a special program, you can, I'm not trying to overemphasize the point, but can take a real problem for society and turn that individual into a tax-paying parent.
And that is our goal. That is absolutely our goal, to provide them with the resources they need to get back on their feet. And you start with the basic. You talk about structure, and you talk about accountability. That has to be with, you know, where they are every day. But when we talk about being a parent as well, because then you have another generation that's going to rely on them.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely. So we have three fatherhood programs that are aligned with our program right mm-hmm. now, who focus on not just the offender, but their children as well, mm-hmm. providing them with resources, everything from books to referrals to back-to-school clothing, back-to-school supplies, focus groups.
Give me some of the names of the other people who are involved in this program with you.
Wow. One of my greatest community supports is the Greater Washington Urban League.
Okay. The Urban League.
The Urban League, AFL-CIO.
Great.
Trusted Solutions Group, Construction Company, Amerigroup, Citibank, the George Abner Collaborative, University of District of Columbia, Public Defender Service, Community Defender Program.
Wow, there are a lot of programs. Go ahead.
United Plan Organization, Men's Fit, New Morning Star Baptist Church, Project Orion. I could go on and on and on. These people routinely really chip in to help our population in every single way.
All right. So there's a lot of people out there who are saying, we understand what it is that you're going through. We're here to help you.
Definitely. And they really, really just go the extra mile for our population. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever our offenders report to them, my child needs a coat, that coat is found the very next day.
Okay.
I need a Metro Pass to get to and from. That's provided for them as well.
Okay.
So they provide the counseling, they provide the support, they provide the referrals, of course, but they also provide the tangible resources that these offenders need to get on track.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's unusual.
Absolutely.
Because in most, again, most parole and probation agencies throughout this country, it is report to me twice a week. I'm sorry, report to me twice a month for 15-minute chunks of time. Have you been looking for work? You know, did you sign up for the drug treatment program? Did you sign up for anger management? Are you going? Can you prove that you're going? Have a pleasant day. Where we work with them as individuals.
We definitely work with them. We work with them for a substantial amount of time.
And that's substantial. How long are they there again?
Many of my guys are with me from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Okay, so, but for how many weeks, months?
Until they find a job. Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, it used to be a time-limited program, but then we realized that the offenders were being discharged back into being unproductive citizens.
Right.
So now it's until they either align themselves with a vocational or educational program or find full-time gainful employment.
Okay, but do some simply hang out there for a while to get the services?
They do. I wish I could say otherwise, but that's absolutely the case.
Yeah.
My longest case right now is a gentleman who's been with me for about 8 months.
Okay.
But I will say on his behalf, during that 8 month period, we've assessed that he was learning impaired. So right now we're focusing on his GED.
Yeah. And in many cases, it is those baby steps that propel a person from one stage of their lives to another.
It really is, because, I mean, this is a 33-year-old man who had no desire to actually go get his GED.
Right.
And when we tested him and found that his scores were so low, it was even further from reality to him.
You know, Curtis, this is an extraordinarily interesting an engagement interview, if you will. We need to do this again. I really enjoy talking to you. And ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I've been talking to Curtis Atkinson, the program manager of our Day Reporting Center. Look for our website, www.csosa.gov. Please have yourselves a very pleasant day.